just imagine if you had to try to wear a mask and pretend to be somebody else every single day of your life. Imagine how much energy that would take. Neurodivergent people are expending probably minimum like 2 times the amount of energy that neurotypical people have to in order to just exist in a day-to-day basis. So what leaders can do to create workplaces that are accommodating to a spectrum of different brains is to proactively destigmatize it and make it safe, make it normal to be neurodivergent. Can literally be an asset to the team on like an ROI level because business is changing rapidly and we need people that think outside of the box.
Welcome to Soroka Speaks, coaching minds and elevating careers. We're so happy to have you here. We hope that you enjoy this episode and that it supports you to put your potential in motion.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Soroka Speaks. I am your host today. It is Claire, and I am joined by my incredible teammate, Villanar. Welcome, Harvey, to this episode of Soroka Speaks.
Thank you so much, Claire, for having me on. I'm so excited to be here. Normally, I'm the one editing the podcast episodes, and so it feels incredibly special to be in front of the microphone today.
I am so happy that, well, you're my co-host and also my guest, so there is no Emily today, but I want to dive right in because I absolutely adore you and I love working with you, and I learned so much from you every single time that we meet and we collaborate on different pieces of work. And I really want to use this episode to talk about more around ADHD and neurodiversity. And so if you would be so kind to share with me and our listeners about your story and your journey around ADHD, neurodiversity, and really how that shapes how you show up in the work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much. So for you, the listener, I will share that I am an ADHD coach, and I originally got connected to Soroka through the coaching industry, the coaching world. And I had quite a difficult early adulthood journey that, you know, had a lot of burnout, a lot of overwhelm, and not understanding what it was that I was supposed to do. I knew that I would have these just so much passion and so much excitement for all of these new projects, new opportunities, but I kept burning out over and over again at so many different places of work, places that I, you know, started out the first 2 or 3 months being really excited about what we were doing, but eventually realized it wasn't in alignment in one way or another. And now that I know who I am, I was late diagnosed with ADHD during the pandemic. And I basically realized that all of those environments weren't really sustainable for an ADHD brain, whether it was the culture or the actual building and, like, you know, workspace itself, or it was that I wasn't in alignment with the work that I was doing. It wasn't working in with the strengths that my ADHD brain has, and that eventually the, like, you know, growth areas sort of would outweigh the strengths that I have in whatever the kind of work was. And I could run on the novelty dopamine energy of being in a new workplace, you know, but only for so long before that would end and the burnout would kick in. So now, the way that I feel about work today and why I feel so grateful to be working with Soroka is that I feel that I have the variety that a brain like mine needs, you know, because not only am I managing the social accounts and editing our incredible podcast, which I'm so grateful that we're doing because I learn so much from you and Emily every week just listening, but also, yeah, getting to be a part of the strategy and, like, contributing to some of the ideas for a longer term vision and, you know, being a part of building our culture together, as well as, yeah, just frankly, the culture that we have at Soroka is part of what, like, makes me feel like I can stay there. And it's, like, the big part of how I think about work today, because I don't think that I could stay indefinitely at a place in which I wasn't being valued or being able to have my accommodations met that I need for ADHD. So that is kind of how I see it now. And yeah, that's the way that it's been shaped, I suppose.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And I do feel sometimes it can be hard to be so vulnerable, right, about the struggles. And it's not only the struggles, but it's not really understanding why you're burning out so much and you come in with such passion and thriving. And then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, can just knock you and not really fully grasping. And I think, you know, you've done so much work around that to now understand what it is that you need.
Yeah. I think it's really easy for neurodivergent people to, of any kind, you know, whether it's autism or dyslexia or ADHD, which, you know, I'm ADHD, but I think all of us have this common denominator of feeling like broken, like there's something wrong with us, because most workplace environments are really very static, very strict with what is allowed and what, you know, what the culture caters to. And so that's actually something I do feel passionately about is, you know, we hear these words, this language, neurotypical, neurodivergent. But I think, you know, it's important to note that neurodiversity is not rare. Neurodivergence is not rare. 1 in 5 people have a diagnosable neurodivergence. More and more people all the time are discovering that their brain is wired differently, especially AFAB, assigned female at birth people, are being diagnosed due to there being a better understanding of what inattentive ADHD is. You know, for a long time, there was a huge gender bias in the diagnostics only being, you know, focused on, the research was focused on male experiences of ADHD, which was very hyperactive. And inattentive is hyperactivity of the mind. So it shows up differently. But there was a huge tipping point for many, many AFAB folks during the pandemic, myself included. And I think, you know, it's important to remember there are no actually typical quote unquote brains. It's just they exist on a spectrum, that wiring, like anything else in biology. It's just that, you know, there are some brains that fit more easily and more closely into like existing power structures and norms that have been laid in place that can just succeed. They can succeed more easily. And so I feel passionate about talking about this because I think destigmatizing the conversation and really being very much anti-shame about having ADHD, making neurodivergence like, you know, the asset that it is culturally, like talking about it in this way and being curious about what neurodivergent people need to be successful benefits everybody on the team because it makes it a safe and beautiful environment for everyone to thrive.
Yeah. I feel like the workplace globally has changed massively and people are more accommodating and understanding of people's situations. And now, like you said, the fact of 1 in 5 people are diagnosed as neurodivergent is huge, right? And it's like you say, all the research, particularly in female, those born female, right? And I think that was something that I have seen over the last few years as well, is that in male, it's very apparent very quickly. But in female, they, from my understanding, is they mask it very, very well. It starts coming out in teenage with the hormone shift and everything like that. And then, you know, I have a friend actually who's got a teenage girl and she says she hides everything and the way that she is and the way that she thinks and the way that she wants to behave in school. And when she comes home, she is like a spring that is just like she cannot control her for about 2 hours. She said because it's everything that she has contained to have this sort of be accepted at school. Yeah. She comes home and her true personality comes out and they've built that home environment that the kids can be whoever they want to be. How do leaders and employers start to create those safe, psychologically safe environments? How do they change the regular 9-to-5, you know, sit at your desk in a cubicle. This is what's expected of you. These are the KPIs that are for the entire team or the entire company that may not serve neurodivergent individuals. What, from your experience, having been in workplaces that don't support you, and your needs. What are some of the learnings that leaders can take away?
Absolutely. Starting off with like naming masking is what they call that, like fronting like a certain persona that is socially acceptable in a different environment, and unmasking, you know, when you feel safe. And you can just imagine, you know, if you had to try to wear a mask, if you were a neurotypical person and you had to try to wear a mask and pretend to be somebody else every single day of your life, imagine how much energy that would take to have to constantly think through. There's like the initial layer, you know, of experience that is your natural impulse, your authentic expression, and then having to filter that and have a layer of self-awareness such that you are taken out of the present moment in a way that neurotypical people don't have to be. So they can be more confident, they get to be more present, they, you know, just in general, don't burn out nearly as often, because neurodivergent people are expending probably minimum like 2 times the amount of energy that neurotypical people have to in order to just exist in a day-to-day basis. So I think what leaders, you know, can do to understand neurodivergent people, or just in general, like for leaders to create workplaces that are accommodating to, you know, a spectrum of different brains of different types of neurodivergent folk, I think the number one thing is to proactively destigmatize it and make it safe, make it okay, make it normal to be neurodivergent by saying, letting your team know, you guys do not have to disclose like any of your diagnoses, but just so you know, it is safe to have a different kind of brain. Your different kind of brain is valued because it, you know, can literally be an asset to the team on like an ROI level, because business is changing rapidly and we need different ideas, people that think outside of the box. ADHD and autistic people especially like have a lot of strength and a lot of value in the different way that they are able to think. But asking what kinds of accommodations people need or would like, whether they are neurodivergent or not, like what can, you know, they do to make meetings more comfortable or more effective, to make the culture, you know, and to make the norms more welcoming for different kinds of folks, to make the office environment more welcoming. Maybe I've been in workplaces that have like a napping area, places that like intentionally don't do overhead lighting, which tends to be like a big buggo for a lot of neurodivergent folks who say that's overhead lighting is really annoying. Yeah. So sensory issues as well as like social and emotional needs. And yeah, making it a safe place to talk about what you think could be better in the workplace, whether you are neurodivergent or not. But also, you know, if people do disclose, knowing that and naming, you know, with your team that neurodivergent people can be and often are the canaries in the cultural coal mine of your company. So sense misalignment, they struggle with lack of clarity, with shame-based feedback and unsafe dynamics early on. So they're more likely to feel basically toxicity and misalignment early and are more likely to burn out, or like just for that to not be a sustainable environment for them. So I think that, yeah, being really intentional and having meta conversations about how we deliver feedback to one another, as well as you know, when it comes to objectives and roles, being really clear, because ambiguity for neurodivergent people is the enemy. It's like the bad guy, because truly in every single way, you know, ambiguity, not understanding, you know, what a project's like, what success looks like, what the end goal looks like, what your piece of it looks like, what belongs to somebody else, you know, not understanding what's the best way to ask for clarification on your team. What, how do people like to be communicated with? All of these different pieces are layered in ambiguity that having simple conversations around can go such a long way. But yeah, I think if I were to boil down ultimately what makes a work environment like a safe and successful place for all different kinds of brains to thrive, it is safety and being, knowing that you are cared about as a human being beyond the bottom line. And that unfortunately is kind of like, seems like a almost controversial thing to say in some spaces. I feel like, oh yeah, we should be caring about humans before we care about money, because, you know, we wouldn't have the business without the money. And that's so very true. But it's ironic because I do think more and more and more the research does show, again, whether we're neurodivergent or not, that all human beings thrive better in any environment, in any workplace, when they know that they are valued and seen and that the people around them want them to feel safe. And so that is, I think, what it boils down to, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I love everything that you said there. And in my head, you know, I'm just thinking about the different examples that you gave there. And I thought, this is to support neurodivergent people. But actually, it's building such an incredible culture within the business, right? I worked in an office. It's very rare that I've worked in an office, but I have spent sort of 18 years, no, 17 out of my 19 years working from home. And prior to that, I was in some offices in different places, worked in shops and all sorts of things. But in one of the companies, they used to, in part of the office, turn off the overhead lights and everyone had a desk lamp. Or some people would swap because they wanted to be by more by the natural light and things like that. And I thought, this is amazing. They're trying to navigate. So if you had to be in a block, right, the marketing team had to be together. They figured out what worked best for everybody within that department so that they could operate in the most optimal way, right? Where it was the light, where it was quieter, like the quieter part of that block or whatever. And so I do recall experiencing that and I thought, oh, this is great, you know, or the desk lamps so we don't have to have the overhead lights on. When you was talking about communication and creating that safety and understanding the spec of the job, understanding the feedback loops, understanding the ultimate goal and your part within sort of the entire project, my head went, isn't that what every leader does? You know, I just thought, oh, this is, yeah. But it's not. And you've experienced that. And actually, I think that is the fundamental of coming back to being an effective leader is ensuring all of your team understand exactly what is going on within the business, what you are all working towards, what their role is, creating psychological safety, and particularly understanding the needs of every single member within your team and how that communication works, not just between sort of the employee and the leader. But I think internally, like, you know, we were talking about the company culture starts within your team. This should start at, you know, C level, board level and work down. But sometimes actually there's these micro cultures within organizations, particularly if they're big organizations, that it can start within that team and it has a ripple effect. Just like the toxicity within a team can have that ripple effect. I love everything that you said about that. And it does make me think, you know, for leaders to really examine and look, how do you communicate within your team? How do your team communicate within each other? Yeah. And are even your team members creating safe spaces to have this conversation? You know, you touched on that money is the bottom line of a business, and it is. Yeah. But if you're losing staff and you don't have staff that can work effectively, you have no product, you have no sales, you have no money.
Yeah, especially because ultimately at the end of the day, like you said, turnover, whether it's turnover, you know, resentment, like a bad banana or burnout, whatever the case is, you know, at the end of the day, people don't want to stay in environments, whether they're neurotypical or not, where they aren't valued and aren't safe and where they're not seen, you know? And so I think you're right on in that leadership should be heading in the direction just on like a just organizational psychology, like 101 level should be headed in the direction of what having neurodiverse team asks of a leadership is something that should be prioritized regardless. It's just that you are less likely to see the negative effects that your leadership is having on your team if you don't have a neurodivergent person on your team. It might take longer because, again, neurotypical people are better able to mask. It's like the main difference. So they're just hiding it from you that your leadership kind of sucks. Ultimately, that's part of why I love, you know, working at Soroka so much and like what we're creating and developing when we're talking about the Soroka Index and helping teams and leadership have a tool in which they can measure these areas. I really do think those areas that we've outlined together are exactly what will help not just like teams with neurodivergent people, but like all teams to thrive. And it comes down, just like we talk about in our team meetings, like safety, S-A, alignment. So yeah, safety, making sure that it feels safe to be yourself, whoever you are, and that you feel safe to express yourself, express your opinions, because when that, you know, expression is stifled, you're not going to get the best ideas. People are going to be too afraid. A, alignment, everyone feeling like they understand what is going on and that the what they're being asked to do is within their like wheelhouse of capability, as well as aligned with their values and what they want to be doing with their life and their time. R, resilience, you know? So, and that again comes down to the systems that we create on how we take care of ourselves and care about each other and the team, you know, as well as many, many other things. But how do we bounce back in general? Optimization, you know, like, is there a way that we can do this better? I feel like this is a hugely under like valued one that I think people are starting to talk more about, especially as we, you know, the age of AI comes around and it does become easier. It is leveling the playing field. AI is leveling the playing field for neurodivergent people because it does make it easier to optimize our time and use our energy on like the things that are in our strengths and that we don't have to spend as much time doing detail work that drains our energy. But optimization, including, you know, could this, there's a meme somewhere that's, could this meeting have been an email?
Yes.
I think everybody can relate to that one sometimes. C is camaraderie, which I feel like is one of the most, again, undervalued ones, which I always come back to thinking about how we are small group animals and we're not that far away, you know, biologically from that time in our DNA. And we get fulfillment and pleasure working on things that are worth caring about with people that we like. And so I think that like actually liking the people that you work with is, and like taking the time to know them and like, and taking the energy to care about them, it has such a huge effect on the culture. And having fun, like in any little way that you can. And then A, you know, accountability. So everybody learning how to effectively give and receive feedback in ways that are not shame oriented, I think is like, again, one of the top things that we can do. So altogether, S-A-R-O-C-A, I think we're trying to bring that, you know, to people like, you know, we haven't been focused on neurodivergence, but it is just a part of it, like organically. So
well, let me touch on that, because if it wasn't for you and your brain, we would not have Soroka Index, because this is a brainchild of you. And, you know, you are incredibly complimentary of Soroka and the team that we have and how we, you know, support you. You came up with this concept of the Soroka Index. You'd said a phrase which I wrote down, which was, you know, is to stifle neurodivergent people's ideas. And by creating this space and this culture, the Soroka Index was born. And I just want to acknowledge you for that, because I absolutely love it. I love everything that it stands for. I love that obviously it's our name, but actually it really is a framework that can be used in any business, in any industry, to build that culture that is all inclusive for everybody. I really want to acknowledge you for that, because I love it. And I think that, like you say, it's not really out there. It is new. We are bringing it out to the world, but I really see a place for it. And I'm very excited to see what you, Harvey, will do to take this out as well, because you are the, you know, I say the face behind the podcast, you're everything behind the podcast for us. And yeah, our newsletter, you know, we wouldn't have the newsletter if it wasn't for you and your vision and your ideas and your creativity. All the socials, all of that has come from, you know, you give credit to Emily and I, but really all of that has come from you and what you can bring and who you are. And we love you for that. So I really wanted to acknowledge that today to everybody listening, and just because I love you. And I'm really grateful for that.
Thank you so much, Claire. I really appreciate that. I do feel especially proud of the Soroka Index. I do like when I talk about my work, I love talking about that to my friends because I feel really, really proud of, you know, and mostly I feel proud. Yes, it is, you know, a framework that we can use that makes, I think, very clear things that are pretty intangible. And it's sometimes hard to pinpoint what exactly the problem is on a team in like team health matrix. But I think this does do that. And it's, you know, it speaks to that problem of helping make visual and make clear like what it is that we actually do here at Soroka. But also why I love it so much is that it's just, I feel, such an organic extension of who we are and our mission as individuals and like collectively as a team, in that we do want, you know, it's all about, you know, our tagline, optimizing humanity in the workplace. Like we really are trying to create a wave of culture and a framework to help people create safe and sustainable environments and careers for everybody to like to thrive. And I think that the work that we're doing is more important now more than ever. And I feel so proud that, like you said, it's not that we are necessarily focusing or targeting neurodivergence as a particular, you know, thing right now. But just by a team actually caring about the things that we teach in our pillars at Soroka, it is just organically going to make it a safer environment for not just neurodivergent people, but also people of all different genders and races and, you know, coming from different social classes. Like having this as a framework and giving people resources to talk about things that are sometimes uncomfortable because people are different and they don't always know how to talk about those differences, and making it more comfortable for them to talk about that and to help people understand each other. That's going to make it a much more fulfilling experience for every single human on a team with other humans. And, you know, I really believe that at the end of the day, I think we have this one wild and precious life. And what we do with our time is really important because we don't know how much time we're going to have. Today, I think that everything that we do comes down to connection and wanting to be connected to ourselves and to other people. And so what we are doing at Soroka is helping people feel more connected to each other, to themselves, and to their mission as an organization. And yeah, I think that is what makes life worth it, is connection. So
goodness, I love that. That gave me chills, Harvey, honestly, because you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, you don't want to go to work for 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours and not feel connected to anybody and not feel heard and not feel understood and not feel appreciated. And you know, all of those feelings, it can be such a lonely place for such a large portion of our waking day. And I think that really just, it's even that one word, connection, can make or break a business and can make or break a person, right? And I think that is such an important and powerful word, and sort of, we're going to wrap in a minute, but I feel like that's such an important point that you made that I really wanted to just highlight that as well. So yeah, thank you for bringing that one to the table today. Yeah, love that. Sorry, it's given me all goosebumps. I want that for everybody. I want everybody to feel that way. And I know that that's not always the case. And I think as a leader, that is so important, to be connected to your team and understand that there is a bottom line. Yes, there is ROI. But if you don't protect your people will not protect your business. Ultimately, that is it.
Yeah. I'm glad that you get it. You get it too. Because yeah, at the end of the day, like, what's the point of all of us doing all of this work anyway? At the end of the day, all of it comes down to like, we do it because we want more time. We want more freedom. We want more, you know, and why do we want more time? Because we want to be connected, whether it's with our family or our friends or ourselves, et cetera. It all comes down to that. And so I think bringing connection and making connection accessible in the workplace is what we do. Because again, I think all conflict in the workplace that creates the friction that gets in the way of those bottom lines, that gets in the way of systems and processes, all of that friction comes from people not understanding each other and not having the support that they need to understand one another. And I think that's exactly what we speak to at Soroka.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to ask you one final closing question. So what is the one thing that you wish every leader understood about neurodivergent people?
I love that. I think that neurodivergence is not a flaw or something to feel shame about. It is a form of brilliance. You know, they say that you shouldn't judge a fish by its ability to fly or whatever that saying is. And I think it's so true. You know, sometimes we don't realize that, you know, company, your team, it's underwater, but you have, you know, a bird on your team or vice versa. I think I'm getting that kind of wrong. But your team has a lot of untapped brilliance on it that the environment is just not optimized for it to feel safe enough to come out. And so when you lean into psychological safety, people, and you remove shame, people rise. When you ask your team members and you're curious instead of shameful around, I noticed that we haven't been meeting these deadlines lately. What do you think is contributing to that? And how can we support you in like making that easier, taking away whatever the bump is in this process that is causing you to have a block? Because most of the time, it's a lack of clarity of some kind. And that is, you know, a leadership issue usually, that there wasn't enough information about what this needs to look like or how it should be done. There, it's either that, a lack of confidence, which, you know, is really just people not believing or like feeling that they can do it because they have some sort of shame around it, or because they put it off because of the lack of clarity. Now they feel ashamed about it. And they, the longer that they put it off, the harder it is to ask for that support. So really those, I think, are the two main things. Clarity and confidence. And if you can help to nurture those things on your team and take away the stigma around asking for help and shame, people will rise and your performance will skyrocket. And there will be more room to create and evolve and innovate in an era where y'all really need a lot of innovation in this era. So let's make it an environment where innovation, brains that can innovate best can thrive.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that was two incredible points to end on. Harvey, I have absolutely loved this session with you. It is incredible to learn from you constantly. I love the way that you think the same as me on some things, you think differently. And I love all of that. Like, I'm constantly learning. And I want to also thank you for coming and really being so open and honest about your experience, about who you are, all of your learning. So yeah, I just want to thank you one more time for that. And to close out today's incredible session, not only thanking my incredible co-host and guest, Harvey, if anybody is wanting to know more about the Soroka Index, please do reach out to us. We will be happy to talk about that in more detail. And anybody that is looking for some more guidance or assistance, Harvey is an incredible ADHD coach. We are incredibly proud to have you on our team. So please do, again, reach out to us, Harvey. I know there's a few bits of content that you have written. I'm sure that there's going to be more coming out soon on our LinkedIn and our blog, on our website. Yep. So stay connected with us. And yeah, we thank you once again for listening to this episode of Soroka Speaks.
Thank you guys so much. Have a good one. Thank you.